Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In a few moments, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, on the business of sports. First of all, our play-by-play call today, a slice of history for the Cleveland Indians.
Look at second. Now the 2-2. A swing and a pop-up. First base side foul ground playable. Perez, Santana, Santana makes the catch!
Tom Hamilton with the history-making call on the Indians Radio Network. They're going to the World Series for the first time since 1997. They'll face either the Cubs or the Dodgers. That series, by the way, tied at two games apiece. Indians win that series, the American League Championship Series, in five. Time now to bring in Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Tony, let's get rolling here with the NFL. I brought it up in the previous segment. The Kaepernick protest is listed in a poll as one of the primary reasons why. When you talk to your business partners, corporate partners, buyers, are they locked in or is there buyer's remorse right now?
They're locked in and solid for now. I think it's, you know, the reality is the buyers that we have are reactive to trends, right? They don't set trends. They just try to ride the tailwind of that trend. So when something gets hip and hot, they're usually a little bit later to it, and they're usually a little bit later to leaving it. So with the NFL still being the bellwether, so to speak, still being the one that everybody's looking at, you know, there's no room for panic yet. But they are asking questions, right? And the questions are around, you know, how are people consuming the games now? Are the ratings down not just because of the political race, but also because maybe they're consuming it via the Twitter stream or the internet, or they're not consuming it at all? And the reality is that's going to be the domino that's going to start the whole thing, is when a major brand decides, okay, this is not it anymore. We're going to take our massive spend and go somewhere else. Whether that's, you know, it's most likely going to be one of the major sponsors of the NFL that has a league-wide deal.
The NFL's tried to stay ahead of this with some of their iPad-style deals, so you can view it on a device. How long will it take to get data that shows that it's being made up, the loss in over-the-air viewership's being actually made up on a device?
You know, there's a couple of problems they run into there. One, they're behind on being able to understand how you're actually going to measure the value there. So that market hasn't yet defined itself, but you also run into the problem of you're hoping that the brands aren't getting different data than you are, right? You know, the interesting thing about television ratings is there's at least a uniform way that we kind of understand how they work. I mean, you and I both know that it's not the most specific and it's not the most detailed, but at least it gives us an idea of where we are historically. We don't have that when it comes to viewing content and how that content, live content, is then leveraged by the brands. The brands do it themselves, right? It would be like Verizon themselves would say, what kind of lift am I getting during the Steelers, you know, Patriots game, during the game, in Pittsburgh, in the markets where we're trying to open new stores and get more carriers, right? And that's something that's going to be a major challenge for them going forward. These things happen to leagues all the time, right? And it's usually not something that the league does that causes them to fall out of favor. Look, Major League Baseball was not the one to decide to create an entire generation of people with shorter attention spans who have more options to entertain themselves, right? And when they did that, the five-hour game now doesn't become all that appealing to the millennial.
Right.
The same thing could happen to the NFL here.
The Rams are going to play the Giants, going to be in London, part of the London series. So give me an idea what the Rams have done with the Los Angeles market. Have they started in a short period of time to capture that market the way you thought they would? And how do people there feel about it, both in terms of money and fan base?
It's going the way I anticipated it would go, which here are the thoughts that we shared in the past. It's first of all, the stadium that they're playing in is pretty dilapidated. The Coliseum is not updated. And, you know, there's little minor things that people don't consider, right? For example, you know, the USC stopped selling alcohol at their games, I believe, 7 years ago. And the NFL can do it. And so that's created lines that are an hour or more because the Coliseum doesn't know how to handle 90,000 people trying to purchase alcohol during a game.
Right.
So the fan experience has been pretty bad. Now, the Rams know this. They're genius about it. I actually spoke with them before the season began, and they had budget for, these aren't exact numbers, but they had budget for 24 people. They were going to have half salespeople and half services people. They actually, after they sold out all of their season tickets online in a week, ended up hiring all services people because they know that they need to keep people engaged until the new building opens. And then when the new building opens, you have to entice them to buy a PSL. So the Rams have to win, and they have to maintain at least somewhat a good experience for these customers while they're building a new building. And that's incredibly difficult to do, as you and I know. You know, people's patience for, you know, a bad experience is much slimmer than most things.
San Diego, the city of San Diego, needs a two-thirds vote to approve the stadium downtown. And you and I know that's a long shot.
So, never happens.
So what's the plan with the Coliseum to have three teams using that facility over a 4.5 month span?
It's, you know, it's not new. It's happened before.
Yes.
The good news is they're going to be able to do this in an era that's different, right? I mean, part of the ratings issue that we were talking about is this, you know, what Mark Cuban, you know, may be correct in calling in that there's just too much content all the time. And now they're going to be able to spread the games out, right? They're going to play a game in London. They can play games on Thursday night. It doesn't always have to be Sunday,
right?
So it enables them to really move around, which is something they couldn't do back when you and I remember when it was, you know, 1980 till 1994, when they had a number of different teams cycling through the Coliseum and football was played on Sunday and Monday. So I believe they're going to be able to do it. The problem is the user experience is going to be terrible for them. The one thing that most people don't consider in San Diego is, look, you know, the Raiders going to Vegas, which is really close to getting done now and probably going to get done, clears the way for the Chargers to go to L.A.
Yeah, no, it, in fact, yeah, in Carson City, they approved the funding, which I think a lot of people were surprised they did it so easily for the Las Vegas site. College football, last weekend, the primetime game on ABC, Ohio State, Wisconsin, did well. I think like a 5.4 rating.
Mm-hmm.
And it beat out actually the SEC of Tennessee, Alabama, 3.9.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the college football ratings are not anywhere in the ballpark of what an NFL rating is doing. But are they doing well enough that makes them feel good about what they're doing?
You know, the problem that college football is running into is you're having mega brands that are making it difficult for the rest of the brands to compete, right? You know, what the Big 12 did this week was laughable, right?
Yeah.
That league's been, league's been a joke for weeks, The league's been a joke for years.
That was my next question.
They had a beauty pageant. They didn't pick a winner, right? And it just makes them look foolish and ridiculous, and they seem to believe that, you know, creating this championship game is going to help them, you know, get somebody into the college football playoff, when it's been proven that it'll give them a 4% higher chance, right, through all of this nonsense.
Right.
The reality is, yes, college football is doing things correctly, but I also think that it's going to come to a head soon where they're just going to have to start changing the labor laws in college football as far as the players. I just think that that day is much closer than people believe it is, and I don't think people like Nick Saban are helping it when he laments a player transferring, when Nick Saban himself is somebody who's broken a long-term contract and left before.
Right.
So I think that college football is right now where NFL football was, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, where they're about to enter this golden age. And, you know, most fans would listen to me talk about this stuff and roll their eyes. But as you and I know, you know, when you're talking about policy change, 4 years from now, that's tomorrow.
Right.
Right. You need to start changing policies tomorrow. And I think if they continue to do that, they're just going to continue to have a golden era of it, because it's, you know, we're starting to get to a situation, even in technology, where people are starting to become more community-based, and there's nothing more community-based than Penn State football,
right?
Than Wisconsin football.
Right, exactly. For the Big 12, the grant of rights runs out, I think, in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Right around there. You know, in this business, is that one of those watershed moments that a lot of people don't realize but is actually a watershed year for people to understand about super conferences?
It's a massive... it'll be a tectonic shift in what we're seeing in college football as far as super conferences, as far as how the CFP is going to work, as far as what the NCAA is going to do in the future. Because the reality is there's haves and have-nots, and, you know, maybe in a juxtaposition against social cultural discussions as well, that divide is growing broader and broader every year, even in conferences like the Big 12. And, you know, Oklahoma and Texas are just not going to want to continue to foot the bill and turn down much more lucrative opportunities elsewhere. Right? You look at how Texas A&M has done as a school since they made the move to the SEC. Yeah. And it's been a significant boom for them. I mean, they would have lost Kevin Sumlin. And had they not left to the SEC a couple of years ago and gotten the money, ratings, and recruiting that have gone along with it, he wouldn't be there anymore. And now he's one of the highest paid coaches in college football.
No doubt. Nigel Hayes had his protest at College Game Day. I saw the sign. But you and I both know it goes a little deeper than that. You know, the O'Bannon case has already set a precedent, fair to say?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The one that people never talk about is the Kessler case. And the Kessler mm-hmm. case goes to the heart of what you talked about in a previous answer about the student-athlete and money. Nigel Hayes is, you have to have current student-athletes be a part of that case. His name is in the case. So, you got to be able to, you know, take a little time and dig into this a little bit, but that's where it is. How important is his voice out there, even though it's not going to make a world of difference about where it's going, but in terms of education that people should be looking at the Kessler case down the road?
As you and I both know, when people make massive social change movements, when they begin them, unless it's something that's totally, unless they've already got fame, you generally don't know who they are, who the person is going to be that becomes a catalyst to a major change, right? When it happens, it doesn't seem like that big a deal, and they don't generally seem like the face that you're going to be considering, right? And that's Nigel Hayes in this case. The reality is they've been looking forever, that movement has been looking forever, for somebody that's going to step forward and say, you know, at my own, probably at the cost of my own, you know, playing time or whatever else, I'm going to step forward and say that this is no longer fair. I get it. I've heard all the arguments. Look, I was a college athlete. I was on scholarship at USC.
Right.
I know. I understand the value of it. And when you're playing a sport that's not a revenue generator like I played, it's understandable that you feel like you're treated fantastically. They give you your food, and you have all the ability to use the amenities in the weight rooms, and they get a scholarship, and that's more than you could ever ask for to play for a sport that has 500 people in the stands, right? But when you're driving significant revenue into a university to a point where you're paying coaches anywhere from $1 million to $8 million a year,
right,
it is unfair that you're in a situation where they're making money off of your likeness, but then you have all the restrictions, right? So one of the two things has to break. So it's either you find a way to pay them or you remove the restrictions, right? And then they can go make money themselves by selling their likeness or doing whatever else they're going to do.
What's hot, what's not, 6 to 8 months out?
Well, it's funny. There's been this movement, so to speak, towards the larger national events, which we've seen. And if you're not going larger national event, you're going small community event. And the in-between is what's getting hurt, right?
Interesting.
If you're the Masters or the Final Four or the Super Bowl, you're doing great, right? And that's continuing to do well. But if you were like a mid-tier game, that used to be a draw, those are really starting to hurt because people are starting to move back towards trying to activate around their community. Basically, with the companies that we're working with and their sponsorships, this massive, you know, trying to grab everybody's attention, it's been so saturated now that people are starting to move back towards, okay, instead of doing a deal with 115 universities, I'm going to do a deal with two. And I'm going to go super deep at those two. And then hope that I get some kind of viral effect that comes from that. So college football has been very strong. I think it's going to continue to be very strong. The major national events have always been very strong. But minor league baseball is starting to become something that people are interested in.
Right.
And even some of the minor league sports. And unfortunately, arena football is not on that list and will probably not be with us in another 3 months.
It's interesting. I was brought up in a meeting I had this morning with somebody. They said they had worked with the arena team in Tampa and said they're in deep trouble. One final note. How significant should it be that the NFL wants to begin negotiations on the collective bargaining agreement and the fact that it's been very quiet on baseball's collective bargaining agreement? How significant is that? Because you and I both know in this economic climate, they don't need a strike. NBA, same thing.
No, this is, and the reality though is I think people see that this is the absolute wrong time to do this, right? The NFL is walking this line right now where they don't really know what the future looks like. There's big time concerns about head injuries that are still going to come to the head. Media is way down, right? They're down 10, 15, 20%. And most people would say, okay, well, that makes the players stronger. It actually doesn't, right? When the pie shrinks, the players don't get more of that either. And so I think right now everybody's kind of tentatively looking around and saying, okay, well, you know, we've been enemies for so long. We've been fighting each other for so long. We don't really, maybe we've been ignoring something that's coming that's going to affect us. And I think they just want to get back to, you know, business as usual, right? The old BAU statement and continue forward. I think the only one that's really going to be a problem is going to be the NBA right now, because the super team issue and a lot of the rules that they put in place to try to keep a fair landscape hasn't worked. Right. It's still a situation where players like Kevin Durant are going to the Warriors, and the haves and the have-nots have been probably broader than you and I have seen since the mid-'80s when there was only three teams that had a chance.
Right.
Year.
Exactly. Yeah. Three teams have a chance every year. That's about what it comes down to. And you can't.
That's what it was for a very long time.
Sure. And you can't have a sport where just 1 month of the year people really want to watch you.
No. Look, you can't. Nobody wants to follow the Washington Generals, right? And that's what's happening right now. And they keep saying, like, well, we're going to make this economically more viable for teams to be able to keep their superstars. But it totally backfired. They didn't plan on having super teams form when they formed. You know, LeBron James is in Cleveland where he's from because he's made enough money and he's had enough rings. But then you look at Kevin Durant, he went to the super team.
Right.
Right? He left a small market that drafted him, and they had all the money in the world to offer him. And they were not a bad team.
No.
So that's a precedent that is going to terrify NBA owners. And I think we're going to go through another battle.
But LeBron James started that trend because he went to Miami because he didn't think he could win in Cleveland originally.
100%. That's exactly what happened. So. And look what he did for his career. He got more international exposure. I mean, if you can argue and claim all you want, like, that's not right. But in the end, he got what he wanted, right? And now he's got a legacy, so to speak, with a couple of rings. And the NBA is in real trouble when it comes to that. Otherwise, I'm super bullish on the NBA as a league because of the fact that what we're seeing with the younger demographics, where our brands are trying to touch people, it's about small, bite-sized pieces of easily digestible media, right? And the NBA is very good at that. It's pretty good at that.
Yeah, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes as well. I mean, that's not to be discounted. In fact, it's a 2-hour to 2-hour-and-15-minute game.
Yeah, as opposed to 5.5 hours.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we had a game end the other day that was the Giants and the Cubs when my Giants bullpen lit the building on fire. That ended at 3 a.m. for the East Coast, right, where I spent half my time. There are no children watching that game at that point.
No.
None of them.
And
what's the intent there?
And what bothered me was I saw you warming up. Sorry, why is Tony warming in the pen? Is Bochy going to bring him in?
it got to that point that, you know, the world has sped up and nuance is being lost. So what kind of sports can create nuance that, or can create an exciting event that doesn't require so much nuance? It doesn't require us to educate our fan base for 20 years like baseball does. I love baseball. I love golf. But
look,
you and I, we got to say to the kids, you kids get off my lawn, because golf and baseball are boring.
Right.
To them, period.
And to them. And the Dodger Nationals game five, Tony, I wanted to watch it, and I tried so hard to stay up for it, I couldn't finish.
You can't do it. It's ridiculous. I mean, I live on the West Coast, and I have a hard time finishing some of these games.
Well, my problem is just old age.
No. it just becomes to a point where it's like, I don't know if this is worth it anymore. I mean, it's, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. It's time for me to go to bed. I got to be at work tomorrow. And I think that's where we're coming, is now we can digest all of those things differently. And with the NBA, I can digest it even later, and I can get the feel for it. So I'm really bullish on the NBA. I'm really bullish on the MLS. Football, I'm not so bullish on. Baseball, I'm not bullish on at all.
Right. Tony, always a pleasure. Baby's doing well, I take.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you for asking.
That's awesome.
Life is great. We're incredibly humbled by the good fortune that we have. So
one of these days.
But looking forward to.
Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I'm going to come out and see you guys. I'm going to come out and see you guys, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it very much. Great to have you. Thanks so much. The audience loves it. You know, I could talk to you for hours, so that's a real pleasure for us. Thanks.
Stay here. We'll talk soon.
Tony Knopf, CEO, Spotlight Ticket Management. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yeah, Suit stopped in to say hi. Said he had his to-do list. He said he took care of all of it today. Admittedly, there are certain ways in language where you can phrase things where it sounds more impressive than it is. When there's only one item on the to-do list and you do it.
He didn't say how much was on the list.
He didn't say how many items were there. There was one. And he got most of it done.
Two-day work weeks are not overrated.
Did you show him your phone?
I did. He got a chuckle out of the why comment.
Why?
Why?
Oh, time now for the sports bozo of the day. Now, the sports bozo has nothing to do with the actual Derrick Rose trial. It has to do with the aftermath of the trial. The New York Knicks guard was found not guilty. I think it was a civil case. When it was over, jurors wanted their pictures with him. What? What? Jurors wanted their pictures with him? If I'm her attorneys, I'm beside myself. They wanted their pictures with him. That's sad. That's sad. All right, 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. Now, there was an article on the NFL thing is interesting. Because obviously they're trying to figure out what's going on. So a lot of people have their own theories as to what's going on with the NFL. Tony Knopp and I just knocked that around for about a half hour in the previous half hour discussing that. And this Yahoo poll came out. And 29% of the 1,136 respondents said they're watching less. So of those 29%, why are they watching less? 40% of them said because of the league protests, citing Kaepernick specifically. And as I pointed out, he is well within, I've said this so many times now, he's well within his rights to peacefully protest and his opinion and how he feels, and he has a freedom of speech and freedom of expression. But keep in mind, that doesn't suppress everybody else's freedom of speech and freedom of expression. They can express themselves pro and con as to how they feel about it, whether they agree with them or disagree with them. That's within their rights, too. And we are not a lockstep society. Well, you know, these people don't understand. Well, maybe they feel he's an entertainer and, you know, play quarterback. Now, here is an article that was put forward by Michael Hurley of CBS Boston. Okay, he writes, there's a problem to diagnose the issue that there is that there's no one answer to it. This is his brief summation of what he thinks the problem with the NFL is. Number one, oversaturation. I think that I don't think there's any question about it. Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night, Sunday afternoon, red zone, game after game after game. Sunday night, let's be honest about it, Sunday night has ruined Monday night. Because, first of all, Sunday night's a great night to watch the game. NBC gets a better cut of game, and ESPN gets a lesser cut of game. Also, the quality of football on Thursday night is just never going to be great because the turnaround is too much from a Sunday to a Thursday to play. You're just not going to get a great turnaround. I mean, these guys are already sore to begin with. So oversaturation is a problem. We've got too much NFL all the time. His next item he put down was arrogance. He says the NFL really can't be faulted, he puts, for
believing he can schedule all 32 teams in a primetime matchup and still draw massive ratings. Actually, the Jags-Titans game drew really good ratings last year. So I think they're looking at that. He thinks they're looking at it as a wake-up call, and guess what? He thinks they'll adjust the schedule next year because of it. If they're smart, they will. He brings up Thursday Night Football, and he says, look, it's not good football. And Al Michaels made a great comment, I thought, on the Bill Simmons show on HBO. He and Bob Costas were both interviewed about this. And they brought up, and he brought up, the ridiculous Color Rush gimmick uniforms. And they are ridiculous. And when you have to look at a game, you know, to me, one of the keys with a good uniform is you look at the game you know is playing. You watch Penn State and Ohio State play Sunday, Saturday night. It will not take any neutral observer long to look out and go, oh, there's Penn State. White helmets, blue jerseys, no names, black shoes, white pants. Ohio State, silver helmets, white jerseys, okay, scarlet numbers, silver pants. Traditional, long-standing uniform that everybody knows who it is on each side. It won't take long. The NFL, you're like, what is that mess? Also, the average margin of victory in a Thursday night game, he points out, is 14.4 points. Not good. Now he brings up the deception issue. And this is an interesting one. He brings up Deflategate, Bountygate, things like that. Roger Goodell, he said the league office struggles addressing players who commit acts of domestic violence. He says there's no doubt a mental toll is taken from so much constantly surrounding the league. He said it might only be a small number, he writes, but there must be people who, in the middle of a dreadful 49ers-Bills game, start to question why they're wasting their time watching the league. And they say that deception is part of it, which then he brings to denial. He said Roger Goodell told the world squarely on Wednesday the NFL stands firmly against sports gambling. And he said the league treats its viewers and consumers, quote, this is his quote, like they're idiots. It's a continuation of the league, he writes, of the way the league ignored concussions for years. Now player safety is a priority. Yet known dirty players get away with playing dirty. He said Cam Newton gets his face bashed on national TV. Players around the league drop like flies every week, and nobody from the league says boo. And he writes, he said, they think you're dumb. You're finally starting to prove them wrong. Interesting. He puts down this one. He says everybody stinks. He says the league insists that there is parity. Very few teams are actually Super Bowl contenders. He says it's the same teams in the mix every year. It's the haves and have-nots. The 1-5 Chicago Bears will be playing in their third primetime game in a six-week span. I pointed out earlier I thought the Bears were unwatchable. Peyton Manning is gone. He writes this one down. He says Peyton Manning is a guy people like to watch. His absence definitely has played a significant role. Networks used to fight every November to get the big Tom Brady-Peyton Manning showdown on the air. He said, now Trevor Siemian's throwing five-yard outs in the final minutes of a game while his Broncos trail by two is not exactly captivating television. I talked about that last week. The Tom Brady suspension. Now, naturally, this is a Boston-based writer. This is going to come up, but I think it has to come up because I think it's a national thing. It's not just Boston-based. TV networks know that in order to sell games to viewers, you need stars. One inhibitor to that goal is the league spends $10 million and 2 years trying to paint their biggest star as some sort of criminal over something that never mattered before in the history of sports. Fact is, he writes, more people seem to hate Tom Brady than love him, but they all can't help but tune in when he's on TV. At least the country was treated to the rousing Jacoby Brissett performance versus the Houston Texans. London. He brings up London. So the NFL felt that it had perfected its product in the United States so much that it went ahead and started scheduling international games in England, China, and Mexico. It's necessary only from the perspective of a corporation in a capitalistic society that must always find a way to increase profits, no matter how high those profits might already be. He goes on to write that he says, from a football perspective, it's completely unnecessary, and it makes little sense to force this complicated, clunky sport into cultures that don't care much to embrace it. Yet the NFL persists and seems intent on setting a team in London permanently. And I agree with that. Take care of your markets here. Take care of your fan bases here. Personality suppression. He writes, the league has had a bad reputation of being a corporation that would prefer its stars to be nameless, faceless, and above all, replaceable. Throwing 15-yard penalties for the most harmless of celebrations doesn't do anything to dispel that perception. Agree with that. We're going to make Antonio Brown change his shoes for the third series of the game. Just let him play. Let him play. Let him play. And then there's this interesting one. This is his last one he brings up. Officials dictate too much. I agree with this. I was watching a game the other night, and it's like every time you turn, there's a flag. There's a flag. There's a flag. He writes, in the very first game of the NFL season, the Carolina Panthers trailed the Denver Broncos by one in the final minutes. Carolina faced a 4th-and-21. The odds were long. And when Cam Newton threw an incomplete pass, the game was lost. Oh, but wait, a flag. A penalty on Chris Harris for giving a shove to a wide receiver resulted in a 5-yard penalty and, more importantly, an automatic first down. He says, this is preposterous and goes against everything the entire premise of football happens to be. There's a reason that many sports fans have lost respect and appreciation of the NBA, and has a lot to do with touch fouls. Agreed. So the NFL at times treats such fouls even softer than the NBA, which should never be the case. He does not. He only brings up the Kaepernick thing in passing here, but it's a bigger issue, I think, than they realize. I don't know if the issue is based on, you know, the 40% of the 29% who say who are watching less, 40% of them say in part it's because of Kaepernick and the protests. Now, I don't know if it's just a matter of timing to go with all the circumstances I just talked about where it's just another add-on and a pile-on, or if it's really turned people off. Now, Michigan players did this for the Penn State game on September 24th. And I was asked about it, you know, what'd you think about the Michigan players? I said, what'd they do? They said, well, didn't you see them protesting? I said, no. I said, they told me there was two F-18s that were supposed to fly over the stadium. So as they were playing the national anthem, I was looking up to see them. So I never saw them protest. And I told you everybody before, I don't care what they do. They can do whatever they want. But, you know, everybody makes their own decision. They want to kneel down. I want to put my hand over my heart. We each made our own decision. Simple as that. They're entitled to do that. I'm entitled to put my hand over my heart. After that, I don't get too worried about it. But some people are upset about it, and they're entitled to feel either emboldened by it, embrace it, or they're also entitled to say they're not happy with it. And as mentioned, it's an entertainment medium. They want to be entertained. Now, some people, they want to be entertained. They don't want to have a political statement to them for 3 hours or whatever. They want to escape and watch a game. So everybody has their own opinion on that. But those are that. I thought Michael Hurley, I thought that was at least an interesting, thoughtful, hit a lot of areas with it article. Some may stick, some may not, but I thought it was interesting. I thought 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago on this broadcast, 2.5 years ago, I said the NFL was bulletproof. It was like having a money tree in the yard. And they've done nothing but make a series of mistakes ever since. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Every 41 seconds, someone purchases an F-Series truck. Hurry to Sunbury Motors Trucktoberfest before someone gets your truck. Now is the best time to buy your next new Ford truck from SMC. Choose from over four city blocks of new Fords. See for yourself why Sunbury Motors has sold over 40,000 trucks. Trucktoberfest means savings up to 12 and a half grand on new F-150s. Every new F-150 at SMC will be equipped with a genuine Ford bedliner and a complimentary tonneau cover. Trucktoberfest means $4,000 off every 2017 Ford Escape, and they're priced as low as $20,880. Trucktoberfest means 0% financing for up to 72 months is available. Trucktoberfest means the best time to buy your next new Ford truck. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. It's Sunbury Motors Trucktoberfest, so hurry in before someone gets your truck.
It's another issue, too, with the NFL. It's this. And it's the fact that so many, you're going to see this in the game coming up on Saturday night here. What do both Penn State and Ohio State run? They both run spread offense. They both run RPO. A lot of people run RPO. Name for me the college quarterback right now that is a next-level NFL-style quarterback that's a star. Certain guys have come out, they're stars. Andrew Luck was a star. Obviously, when Manning came out, he was. Then Brady wasn't. He was a sixth-round pick, but then became one. But who are the stars in college right now? Because part of the key to the success of the NFL is that college has already developed star players that have name recognition when they get to the league. Ezekiel Elliott was a star at Ohio State. He's with the Cowboys. Notice the excitement around Dak Prescott. But who's out there right now in college football?
I mean, the three top stars I would think for college football would be the three quarterbacks for Louisville, Florida State, Ohio State. But the question is, can they?
None of them can play in the league.
Right.
They can't.
Yeah.
Barrett. Hey, somebody said to me the other day, he said, well, you think Barrett will come back for a senior year? And I'm like, I said, what are his options? They looked at me like, I said, what are his options? I said, he can't go to the NFL. He cannot go to the NFL. He will be Denard Robinson in the NFL. He'll be a running back. Or Braxton Miller will be a slot receiver. He'll probably be a running back in the NFL. He will not be a quarterback. That's not a put-down of him. I'm just saying that game's a different game. I remember last year a fan said to Jack and me, and Jack ended up answering the question, but he answered it the same way I felt. This guy said, when I look at these four quarterbacks, these are how they rate them in order. He said, JT Barrett 1, Braxton Miller 2, Connor Cook 3, and Christian Hackenberg 4. And Jack looked at him, he said, I respectfully disagree. He said, on the next level, Hackenberg and Cook will both get there. He says, Miller will be playing a different spot, and so will Barrett. He said, Miller and Barrett are the bottom two. And the guy had this confused look on his face, because again, it's a different game. Barrett's game does not translate. Jackson's game does not translate. Now, Deshaun Watson to Clemson, maybe. Maybe. But one of the problems, there's a couple problems that you have in college football now. I mean, and I'm talking about, it's not college football's problem. It's the job of the college football coach to take his personnel and win with his personnel. That's their job. It's not their job to sit there and develop NFL quarterbacks. That's the NFL's problem. But what happens is that you have no huddle. I mean, Penn State doesn't huddle. And Penn State doesn't take any snaps under center. So you have all these quarterbacks. And by the way, Ohio State's the same way. They don't huddle and they don't take any snaps under center. Okay. Well, guess what? In the NFL, you huddle and you take snaps under center. Not all the time, but you take some. And it's a completely different deal in college where I'm not reading coverages. I mean, that's one of the big problems with the Baylor quarterbacks. You'd think Baylor, which throws the ball all over the lot, oh, they must have a really sophisticated passing game. Au contraire, they have quite the opposite of that. Their passing game is simple as simple gets. It's all predicated on you, the defense, being off balance. I mean, they don't sit there and read a coverage. They don't change a protection. They don't do any of that stuff. They don't go to the line and go, hey, there's the mic. He's up. He's down. Right, I'm going to switch the running back over. Blitz is coming over here. They already get the play called is where they're going with it. And that's a big issue. That doesn't translate college to the NFL. There are no stars in quarterbacks right now in college that would be NFL star quarterbacks. Now, they're college stars. Barrett's a star. Watson's a star. But Watson might be an NFL quarterback. Barrett's not. Jackson at Louisville is not. Francois at Florida State, let's see how it goes for him. Maybe. Now, maybe the best pro-style quarterback out there, the best two would be Rosen at UCLA and Brad Kaya of Miami.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.